You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to all the Eagle FM listeners. You are now tuned in to another fantastic edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. As usual, I'm your host, Handy. I'll be with you until 8 p.m. this evening. And today we have a special, special show lined up for you. We have some special guests joining us today. I'll get to those in just a minute. But welcome. Grab your drinks, grab your food, grab your snacks. You're in for a good show on the Eagle Sports Zone. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media pages. That's Eagle FM. Let me be on Facebook, on Instagram, on X, on LinkedIn. It's on WhatsApp as well. If you'd like to get a link to the WhatsApp channel, simply message 081-241-44. That's 081-241-44. If you'd like to follow our WhatsApp channel for your on-the-minute updates on the latest and greatest in all things business, economics, policy development, trade related, all the things that make you a smarter citizen are why you need to subscribe or to follow rather our WhatsApp channel. And speaking of becoming a smarter citizen, the number I just gave you, which is 081-241-44, is also the same number you should save in your phone and message on WhatsApp if you would like to subscribe to the Villager newspaper. That is our digital paper that we publish every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for a total of $0 and 0 Namibian cents. So for absolutely free, you can gain access to the Villager newspaper every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Like I said, make sure to save the number as a contact and you will receive it live and direct every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. And also to welcome actually to all of our listeners from all around the world. I say that because to all of the listeners tuned in via the Eagle FM mobile application or the Eagle FM website, which is www.eaglefm.com.na. Anywhere you are in the world, you can stay in tune, stay in touch with your favorite talk radio station. You can listen to us from anywhere you are in the world, whether that's South Africa, whether that's China, whether that's the USA, whether that's Germany, whether that's Brazil. You can stay in touch with your favorite talk radio station. And if for whatever reason you happen to miss your favorite show, then fear not, because we have a solution for you. And that solution is our podcast library, our extensive podcast library. Every single thing that you've heard on this radio station before, or that you've heard about that was on this radio station before, is available for you in the podcast section of the Eagle FM mobile application, as well as the website. Simply go to that section, type in the name of your favorite show, and you'll have access to all the wonderful broadcasts that we've had here on Eagle FM Namibia. Now, today, like I said, we have some special guests lined up for you to tune in and hear from. The first being Roger Searin, local cycling phenom in every sense of the word, world-class cyclist now in every sense of the word, as he has signed for the European outfit that is Alpecin Premier Tech. That is one of the world's best cycling teams. So in simple English, we have one of the world's best that was developed right here in the land of the brave, going to represent us on various international stages as a professional cyclist. And Roger is only 18 years old, might I add. So great future ahead of him. He's achieving great things in the present, and I have no doubt that he will continue to fly the Namibian banner high. But we will hear from him in a few moments. Today we'll also be joined by a South African that is none other than Liema Dopolo. He's a FC Ongos defender, 22 years old, straight from SuperSport United, or the club formerly known as SuperSport United. We'll get into the fall of SuperSport United with him as well. But he's another one that will be joining us today. So we have a special, special jam-packed show for you today. If you'd like to chime in at any time, the number in the studio is 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. Now, normally we start off with some local sporting news, but today, not much happened in the world of local sports, seeing that it was Independence Day yesterday. Namibia celebrated its 36th Day of Independence. So some of you are probably still celebrating right now. So happy belated Independence Day to Namibia. And actually, yesterday during Independence Day, I thought about today's show. I thought about, I should have had a special Namibian sports show lined up. But then I thought exactly on what topic would it be. So for next week, I already have the plan for next week. We're going to visit the National Archives. We're going to see what is in the National Archives when it comes to Namibian sport. What can I find there? And I mean, we've heard from veteran sports journalist Carlos Kambayekwa about the lack of recorded Namibian sports history. We've heard from our current Minister of Sports, that is Ms. Sanet Steenkamp, about the importance of filling the National Archives with various sporting achievements. So we're going to see at what the state of the National Archives looks like in terms of sport. But that is for next week. That is for next week. For now, we will start with a story that's taken the footballing world, actually the sporting world, by storm. And that is this, you know, I'm supposed to remain impartial as a journalist, as a presenter, but this ludicrous decision by CAF, that is the body that governs African football, to overturn, I've never seen anything like this happen in my life, to overturn the decision, or to overturn the result, not the decision, the result of Senegal winning the African Cup of Nations, months after the final has been played, mind you. So, in case you've been under a rock this past week, CAF decided that the quote-unquote just full winners of the 2025 African Cup of Nations that were hosted in Morocco, we heard from many listeners and many guests on previous shows about, you know, about, I'm trying to politically, to phrase this correctly, about the rumors and the myths surrounding, you know, CAF and Morocco. But the 2025 African Cup of Nations was hosted in Morocco. Morocco reached the final but were beaten by the Lions of Teranga, who won the match 1-0. We all saw what happened towards the end of the match with Senegalese players storming off the field, being unhappy with the refereeing decisions. We saw things happening with the ball boys. All kinds of chaos was happening during the African Cup of Nations. But the match, as we all saw, was decided on the field of play, as every match is supposed to be decided upon. Senegal won 1-0. We saw great celebrations in the stadium. We saw when the trophy went back to Senegal. We saw the parade. We saw the tens and thousands, maybe even hundreds and thousands of people out in the Senegalese streets in Dakar celebrating. We saw the international footballing world rejoicing, ecstatic that Senegal had won the African Cup of Nations, their second African Cup of Nations in recent history. Another trophy for another legacy builder for Sadio Mane, who etched his name, if it wasn't already, in African footballing history as one of the all-time greats when it comes to African football. I mean, if we talk about Didier Drogba, we talk about Samuel Eto'o, we talk about George Weah, or any African great that you can name, you now have to put Sadio Mane in that bracket as well. And CAF decided, no, all of that has to be reversed. We are now making Morocco the winners, giving them a 3-0 victory, which I find, as I said, I'm not supposed to give my personal opinions here, but objectively speaking, ridiculous decision for them to do so. And let's actually hear from the CAF president. He spoke on this overturning. And let's listen to his statement about why this was overturned. And we'll listen to that in a few moments. He gave around a 5-minute statement, obviously defending what the federation that he leads, the appeal board of the federation that he leads. Obviously, he defended that decision, but we'll hear from the man himself in just a few moments. And after that, we'll talk about, there's one issue regarding this that many people aren't actually thinking about, and that has to do with the prize money, actually. As you know, the winners of the African Cup of Nations received 10 million. 10 million US dollars, the highest prize money yet, and the runners-up received 4 million. And so after this commercial break, we'll hear from the CAF president, that's Patrice Motsepe. We'll be right back after this.
Celebrate Namibia's Independence Month with amazing deals at Exodus Investment CC. Get solar lights for just 100 Namibian dollars. We also stock CCTV Wi-Fi cameras, TV mounts, DSTV and GoTV satellite TV accessories, plus replacement remotes for TVs, air conditioners and many other electronic accessories only at Exodus Investment CC. Visit us today at Shop 7, Black Chain Shopping Center in Katutura, next to Bank Bentuk. We are open daily, including public holidays, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. for your convenience. Call or WhatsApp 081-3191-395 and find us on social media. Exodus Investment CC, your trusted store for quality electronics and accessories. Hurry! Our Independence Special runs until the 13th of April 2026. And remember, Exodus Investment CC, we courier countrywide. Call us now!
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. As I promised before the commercial break, we will hear from the CAF president, that is Patrice Motsepe. Let's take a listen to what he had to say about the now infamous decision of the CAF appeal board. Let's see.
I've been informed of the ruling by the CAF appeals board concerning the appeal by Morocco relating to the AFCON Morocco 2025 final match. And I previously expressed my extreme disappointment with the incidences that took place at the final match. And the important thing of what happened on that final match is it undermines the good work that CAF has done over many, many years to ensure that that there's integrity, that there's respect, that there's ethics, that there's governance, as well as credibility of the results of our football matches. The occurrences, those incidences at the final match of the AFCON Morocco exposes is the work that we are still dealing with concerning the suspicion and distrust. It's a legacy issue. When I became president, one of the major concerns was the impartiality, the independence, and the respect of referees and match commissioners. And a lot of good work has been done, but there continues to be suspicion because it's a legacy issue. It's something that has been there for many, many years, and we consistently deal with that because that's critically important. Another important matter that these incidences at the final match brought to the fore is the independence and the respect of our judicial bodies. We, in choosing the members of our judicial bodies, we followed a different path, different from what had been the case before. We invited each member association and we invited every zone, the six regional areas or the six zones in CAF, to give us names of respected judges and respected lawyers, because it is important that the decisions of our disciplinary board, the CAF disciplinary board, and the decisions of the CAF appeals board is viewed with the respect and integrity that's very important to us. So if you look at the composition of those bodies, they reflect some of the most respected lawyers and judges on the continent. And but we will still have to deal with this, with the perceptions and the concerns about the integrity. It's an ongoing issue. We are very clear at CAF that we are enormously committed to ensure that not only in terms of what we do, because we've implemented best practices, we've identified judges and lawyers from every region, from every zone, from the 54 countries in Africa, to make sure that these are people who have integrity and have a track record, and you know, partly the independence is reflected by the decisions that were taken by the two bodies. The CAF disciplinary board took one decision. The CAF appeals board took a totally different position, and I'm told that that Senegal is going to appeal, which is very important. Every one of the 54 nations in Africa have a right to pursue their appeals and their advanced interests, not only at the highest level in Africa, in CAF, but also the highest body, which is the CAS. And we will adhere and respect the decision that's taken at the highest level. A critical factor is that not a single country in Africa will be treated in a manner that is more preferential or more advantageous or more favorable than any other country on the African continent. We take what has happened at the final match in Morocco during the AFCON, the Total Energies CAF Morocco 2025, we take it very, very seriously. And we have already started with very important steps to make sure that those areas which have been identified as deficiencies and where there's need for improvement, that the necessary resolutions are passed. We have very high standards that we set for ourselves. It is important for us that ordinary football supporters and spectators in every one of the 54 countries in Africa, in their judgment, not in CAF's judgment, not in my judgment, regard the decisions of our judicial bodies as fair, with integrity and impartiality. And what is equally important, that they regard our referees, our VAR operators, and our match commissioners as people who are fair and just, and those decisions that are taken reflects the impartiality and independence that's critically important.
That was CAF President Patrice Motsepe, as I said, basically saying what we all expected him to say. I mean, what, realistically speaking, what else did we expect him to say? He said many things that it's difficult for me to speak about this without giving you guys my personal opinions, but he said many things that one would disagree with, one would disapprove by saying that's, you said one thing, but another thing happened. But one thing that he did mention is about, he spoke about Senegal's potential to appeal the appeal, so to say, by taking it to CAS. And in a few moments, we'll listen to a news clip about what CAS is likely to do in regards to the situation between Morocco and Senegal. But, and I would like to hear from you guys, 083-288-401, if you'd like to chime in. What are your thoughts on this? But one thing CAF has done, or the quote unquote appeal board has done with this, is open up a can of worms that honestly did not need to be opened at all. Like I said, we all watched the match. We all saw what happened. We all saw Senegal rightfully win this tournament, right? And now, a tournament that, by the way, already had a lot of negative connotations towards it. One, being as AFCON in general, we know the connotations that come with AFCON as a tournament. This was supposed to be one of the tournaments that puts AFCON in a different light to the international community now, and some of the continental community about it being like a serious, serious tournament. You know, Kev, the AFCON is often looked at in a humorous manner for the things that happen in the tournament. And this only adds to that. In fact, it makes it even worse. Like I said, these things don't happen anywhere else except, it seems so at least, except on our continent. And like I always say, sport is a reflection of society. This is a true reflection of the constant chaos, the constant political madness that happens in our continent. And it's now it's now coming out in ways that we've never seen before in the sporting context. And when I said CAF unintentionally opened up a can of worms that should not have been opened, is now reports are saying that Guinea is seeking a review of the 1976 AFCON title after CAF overturns the Senegal victory. So apparently there was a situation in 1976 where something similar happened and Guinea lost that match. This was a group match. Guinea had lost that match and now they want it to be overturned. What will prevent other nations from going back, other finalists at least, from going back and saying, oh, the AFCON tournament of 2000 and whatever, we feel we lost unjustly. We would like it to be overturned. What's going to happen now? But one of the things that we aren't really talking about when it comes to this is the prize money. Because there is now a $6 million question mark in regards to the prize money. Like I said before the commercial break, the winners get $10 million, which I assumed has already been paid into the Senegal account. The losers get $4 million, which also I assume has been paid into the Moroccan account. Now that this body has decided that Morocco is the winners, and might I add, they also reduced the fines that were handed out to some of the Moroccan players for some of the antics that they were doing, like the stuff with the ball boys and so on, and the stuff with the goalkeeper. They reduced that. For what reason? I don't know. But like I said, this just adds to the conspiracy theories that were going on during the African Cup of Nations. This doesn't make things better. It makes things exponentially, worse. Okay. So now that the result is overturned, the question now lies, is Senegal supposed to return $6 million to CAF so that CAF can pay Morocco an additional $6 million for quote-unquote winning the tournament now? That's something I would love to hear Mr. Motsepe speak on as well. What's going to happen with the prize money? And here from a piece I read about this, I will read you a short excerpt. It says, for Senegal, the implications are both financial and reputational. A requirement to return $6 million would not only affect federation finances, but could also create internal complications around player and staff bonuses. That's another thing. What's going to happen with the bonuses that the players received and that the coaches received? Are they supposed to be reversed now? It goes on to say, it could strain relationships with the sponsors and partners who align themselves with a title-winning campaign. More broadly, it introduces the likelihood of legal escalation with the potential appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which could take months, if not longer, to resolve. And in a moment, we'll hear a short clip about what CAS, that is the Court of Arbitration of Sport, will do. And as we've seen with cases before with CAS, these things take months and months and months and years. So are we going to have a situation now where CAF decides, oh, Morocco is the winner? Then Senegal says, we would like to appeal that decision as well. It goes to CAS. And then CAS says, oh, CAF, you are wrong. Senegal is the actual winner. Let's say a year from now we hear that. What's going to happen now again with the money? let's say during that time, the money was transferred over. So is it then going to be required to be transferred over again? Like I said, CAF opened a door that did not need to be opened. And then I would also like to read you a piece about the governance, how this puts African sporting governance in question. It reads as follows. The broader implications extend beyond this single tournament. AFCON is one of Africa's most valuable sporting properties in the world, attracting growing interest from sponsors, broadcasters, and investors. Incidents of this nature highlight a fundamental risk within that ecosystem. Regulatory uncertainty. When competition outcomes can be overturned weeks after the fact, and when financial consequences remain unclear, it raises serious questions about governance, dispute resolution, and the reliability of commercial frameworks. When dealing with stakeholders across the sport business value chain, clarity is not optional. It is essential. And again, remember what I always say, sport is a reflection of society. That sentence, when dealing with stakeholders across the sports business value chain, you can remove sports business, put any industry there. When dealing with stakeholders across X value chain, clarity is not optional, it is essential. Right? This is the problem we have across, you can name any industry on this wonderful continent of ours. It goes on to say, sponsors need certainty on what they are buying. Again, this goes to our conversation about funding local sports. Broadcasters need confidence in the integrity of competition. Federations need predictable revenue structures. And players need assurance that performance-based incentives are secure. Until CAF provides definitive guidance on the financial settlement, AFCON 2025 remains unresolved in a critical sense. Morocco may now hold the trophy, but Senegal may still hold the money. Between these two realities lies a $6 million question and the deeper truth about modern sports. Results determine outcomes, but governance determines value. And that is well put by the author of the article. It's not here, but this is from the Business of Sports, of Africa, right? And they make valid points, questions that I too would like to raise had I had the opportunity to interview Mr. Patrice Motsepe. It's very unfortunate and quite disappointing, honestly, with this whole situation. But also for those listening, the Carabao Cup final has kicked off between Arsenal and Manchester City. Currently 0-0. I will keep you up to date if anything changes during the program. And whilst we are on European football, Tottenham have just lost 3-0 to Nottingham Forest. They are relegation rivals, so that puts them in a deeper predicament when it comes to relegation. Chelsea also lost over the weekend. That was yesterday. They lost to Everton 3-0. Manchester United drew 2-2 with Bournemouth, and Liverpool, defending champions, many seem to forget, lost 2-1 to Brighton. So as things stand in the English Premier League table, Arsenal and Manchester City obviously not playing, so nothing has changed in that regard. They are still 9 points ahead of the citizens. Manchester United is in third, despite dropping 2 points, might have gained a little bit by drawing with Bournemouth. They are on 55 points. Aston Villa beat West Ham today 2-0, so they are in fourth on 54 points, creating some distance between them and Liverpool, who are in fifth on 49 points. And then Chelsea is in sixth on 48 points as well. And the relegation fight, we might actually see Tottenham get relegated, as they are now just 1 point above the relegation zone on 30 points, with West Ham, Burnley and Wolves in the relegation zone on 29, 20 and 17 points respectively. But let's hear about, let's continue with this African Cup of Nations debacle. Let's hear from what some analysts think that CAS is likely to do when Senegal takes this circus of a case to them.
couple of days now since CAF made that unprecedented move, and I think I'm being polite, to strip Senegal of the 2025 AFCON title and then award it to Morocco. The move came after a review of that incident in the January 18th final, the most amazing kick there, that which saw the match delayed by 14 minutes. The Senegal players had left the field in protest against the referee's penalty decision. Morocco missed the spot kick. Senegal went on to win the match 1-0 after extra time. The Senegal Football Association now set to challenge the decision by the Appeals Board of CAF. They're going to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Newsroom Africa's Voyo Makhoba joins me now live in studio. Voyo, good afternoon to you. I'm no expert on football, but this is a mess. The three people who are really involved, so you've got CAF, you've got Morocco, you've got Senegal. What are they saying?
So after, of course, the statement came out on Wednesday with CAF saying, okay, going back to the decision that they've made that Senegal now will be stripped of the title, going to Morocco. Of course, the two federations would have a reaction to the matter. Morocco puts out a statement, which I think when I personally saw it after I saw what Senegal, you know, had put out. Of course, Senegal's side has come out and said that they're rejecting this decision that was brought out by the appeals board, CAF appeals board, and saying now they're taking the matter to the Court of Arbitration for Sports, which is the highest court that can sort of denounce or put out a verdict that will be final and won't be sort of appealed beyond that. And then Morocco, of course, on their side, they're happy with the matter and they've put out a statement saying that, you know, they accept the decision that was put out by the appeals board. Then you've got few days, sort of a day later, CAF president Patrice Motsepe also putting out a 6 minutes video, which I personally had to watch about two or three times to sort of understand what he's trying to sort of communicate with us. And of course, part of that, he was then repelling on the fact that, you know, there's been, I mean, when people talk, they speak about the fact that he's been captured or he's a president or even the word of corruption sort of lingers on top of him. And he had to come back and say that, no, this matter in terms of the appeals board is an independent body that is selected. So he has no matter in the business of say, of this. But he then goes on to further say that, yes, in terms of the image, in terms of that, that has been sort of now one thing that has been questioned in terms of African football. That image, which we also speak about now, today, to say that has been tainted now. All of the work that has been done by every single person who's a stakeholder to African football, that work now goes out the window, including the players that play on the European side of football who have to risk their positions in the respective team in the January window to say, I want to go to the Africa Cup of Nations. I could lose my spot. All of that work and the many other legacies and many other things are sort of now put into question. And you now say, what is the legacy of African football moving forward? What are the sort of lessons also that we are going to learn from this? Which is one of the things that when I spoke to sports lawyer Raymond Hack today to ask him, how, what do we learn out of this as sort of, if I may put it and say African football, what are the sort of things that we look back to, which is one of the things is the rules and regulations of the African football or anything else, which we, they haven't looked for a very, very long time. How do we look into them? How do we amend them if they need to be amended at this point?
So, I mean, the criticism against CAF's decision, and I imagine it's been a long queue of people to say things, and I'm happy to stand at the back of it.
Of course, there's many people like at the back of that. It's the emotion. I mean, when I'm reading on social media, some of them are very, very emotional. Some of the people trying to sort of break down what sort of these articles, 82, 83, 84, what is article 5.2 of IFAB as well in relation to sort of against what do you call this, what the appeal board claimed to be against Senegal. So you've got Article 82, you've got 84 and 83, which simply relates to leaving the field, if you're off the field and all of that matter. But 5.2 gives power to the referee to say he has the final decision. So people have got this thing where they're trying to be lawyers, sports lawyers trying to figure out sort of everything. And in the midst of that, the criticism comes in now in terms of, you know, like I said, the governance part of things, which is the one matter that some emotional part is directed to a Patrice Motsepe as sort of the highest governor of the body, which is CAF. And then the other criticism as well, which is, again, in relation to just now, the legacy of African football now, where does it stand? And that is coming from the different people just normal social people that love football, but also the people that follow football in the highest levels, whether it's from the federation, whether it's the lawyers, the ones that are coming up and saying, we think the possibility of the decisions at the end, even by chaos, could be this. But already just the image of this thing has been tainted.
You've been looking at Hack, and you've been looking at what Motsepe have said.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you sum up, how would you explain what they've said?
Whew. Or from the CAF side?
Well, from Hack and Motsepe.
Okay, so my conversation now with Raymond Hack, who is a former arbitrator at CAS, who's a former head at disciplinary committee as well, he, from his side, it's Senegal's position taking the matter to CAS. Where do they stand? What leg did they stand on? And once again, I go back to 5.2, which speaks about the referee's decision, his final decision. Going back to the matter where, in the final of the tournament, it's you've got a team that leaves the field. You've got Morocco, who has the opportunity to say that they forfeited the game as the referee, goes to the referee. You forfeited. This team has forfeited the game. We should be the winners. But the referee allows the game to continue. Morocco goes and takes the penalty, which then they lose. It's so from that moment of allowing Senegal to come back and you taking the penalty, you're forfeiting your right to the forfeiture and all of those things. So those are some of the things that we sort of touched on, which then gives Senegal the leg to stand on at CAS.
Sure. Let's hear what Raymond Hack had to say.
Believe that the game should be won on the field of play.
Yeah.
It should never be won on the boardroom. You've got to look at what is in the interests of sport, what is fair play, what is something like that. So, you know, in my opinion, I would presume that the CAS arbitration board will hold in favour of Senegal, and that will be the end of the matter. But, you know, as I said earlier, lawyers have different versions. What will happen, it will be a legal argument which will be presented by both parties. And again, it's what is the spirit of the game? I think for me, that's the most important thing. And once you take away the power of the referee in a game, I think you open it up to too many challenges, which I will not be able to defend.
And of course, I mean, in relation to what President Patrice Motsepe also had to say after the matter was announced on Wednesday, and this is what the president had to say.
The independence is reflected by the decisions that were taken by the two bodies. The CAF disciplinary board took one decision. The CAF appeals board took a totally different position. And I'm told that that Senegal is going to appeal, which is very important. Every one of the 54 nations in Africa have a right to pursue their appeals and their advanced interests, not only at the highest level in Africa, in CAF, but also the highest body, which is the CAS. We have very high standards that we set for ourselves. It is important for us that ordinary football supporters and spectators in every one of the 54 countries in Africa, in their judgment, not in CAF's judgment, not in my judgment, regard the decisions of our judicial bodies as fair, with integrity and impartiality, and what is equally important, that they regard our referees, our VAR operators, and our match commissioners as people who are fair and just, and those decisions that are taken reflects the impartiality and independence as critically important.
How presidential did Patrice Motsepe look? The whole thing now goes to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Yeah. Now, that's fine. That's why the court exists, is what you do. But we remember from Caster Semenya how long that can take. I mean, we could have another AFCON before we finally get to the actual verdict.
Yes. So you've got, of course, next AFCON 2027, but you also got the World Cup that's coming up this year. So who do you say are the African champions when they go into the World Cup. But coming back to the CAS matter now, so it's now left to Senegal to then appeal to CAS, which then gives them a certain period, which is stipulated in sort of the CAF regulations. So 10-day period. So in this period now, Senegal is deliberating and saying, when we even take it to CAS, what sort of what legs do we have to stand on? What is our argument? So they take that to CAS, and of course now they file that appeal. I mean, I have to bring these papers because it's a lot. I mean, then, of course, the panel will be then appointed to then sit and hear the matters, which then brings in Morocco, Senegal to then present. And also if the witnesses are available and other people, even experts, are then brought forward to bring this matter forward, then that is
the... uhupiro uongeshefa oshinimo mtumba go Namibia International Cyber Security Conference and Exhibition omvoma ovigajo mirongo mbali na hamano ikondo epangero mahangano go paumwene u ministeri wepangero ni ikondo ya yoroka no handimwe oneta muisanwa muhoroke komtumba omtitatu watumburwa metetekero esikwa mirongo mbali na gali siko mbali na ganega apirili mavigajo mirongo mbali na hamano ekharoko Arembush Travel Lodge movenduka oshiparashi kundathanwa kwanja gane kuyerere kombinga ukoshoki wopa ungomba ano saiba hejin kene una okuironge kithira omashongo koko marungura no marongo kekopope ko jerongizo jo marungura na iru inji koneka omahangano ohandimwe ni kondo mboka tamkatuma akaliripo ya konda pantu ya tano otamukapewa ompito yomtu gumwe awedhu apo hasho ashikeshoka pethimbo yomtumba ogotungoka otakukakara o VIP saiba gala dina nuyerero unji wa maisha angizo no mapura apuro kwatathana nayo konoraje tatu imwe onda tu ya tano omgoijeali nenge ko email info@dstech.com.na nenge utarele pwe panja jao jopa ungomba ko www.dstech.com.na Namibia International Cyber Security Conference and Exhibition Securing Namibia Digital Future.
Hearing. So that can either be done in Switzerland, can be done even by video conferencing. Once those are presented, then a verdict then will be brought forward. But that could take about 6 to 12 months because the key part of it is not an emergency matter. So that's the thing. So 6 months to 12 months means that even after the World Cup, the FIFA World Cup, nothing would have happened. They wouldn't have set for anything. But that's how long it could take at CAS, as we've seen with Caster Semenya.
When I started playing football, I think under 6 or under 7, and you'll know I didn't really get past sort of under 10.
Yeah.
But the referee's whistle was final. You played to the whistle. Now, if I were the referee association, if I was the president, I would want to make an appeal to CAS. I would want to be part of the case and say, what about us then? We blow the whistle. We make a decision. We may get them wrong. That's fine. There'll be a match report afterwards. But what's the point of having a referee if some group of lawyers can go and overrule me?
Yes, and I think that is the biggest question. Like even Raymond Hack say, it's saying taking that matter which can be finished off the field of play, but taking it to a boardroom. If you are saying that the referee has these powers to finish off a match, then what then? What are the rules then for if then you go back into the office and say that actually he doesn't have the power? So it's really a matter of question.
Voyo, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Voyo Makoba, our sports reporter, and of course, so much in all of this. How many times have we seen situations where the lawyers now are overruling the politicians? Now they're overruling referees. End of the world as we know it. Talking of which,
Yes, there was some further insight into what we were discussing at the top of the show, and like the CAS arbitrator. Mr. Raymond Hack said, football matches are won on the field, not in the boardroom. And CAF, you have now, truthfully speaking, disgraced African football. The only winners in this are going to be the lawyers, honestly. It's going to be the lawyers on both sides that now have the pleasure of filing hundreds and hundreds of hours that they can cash in on. You know, these are the situations that people that study sports law, that study law in general, these are the situations that they dream of. Court cases that take years and years and years to finish. Why? Because every second that goes by and no decision has been made, there's only one person profiting, and that is the lawyers. So, let me know what you think about this, unfortunate situation happening in African football. Like they said, it's very much possible that we're gonna start the next African Cup of Nations, the one that's happening in East Africa, without knowing who won the previous African Cup of Nations. How ridiculous is that? Again, things that only happen on our beautiful continent. But with that said, we'll move from continental African football to a bit more. We'll bring things a bit closer to home. And that is with FC Ongos defender Leyama Dopolo. Will be joining us in just a few seconds to discuss his footballing journey. We'll be back on the other side with our special guest Leyama on the other side of this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We are now joined by a special guest, none other than Mr. Leyama Dopolo, Ongos FC defender by way of South Africa. Leyama, thank you very much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing quite well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very good, thank you. So let's take it, before we get to your time in Namibia and your time at Ongos, let's take it all the way back. Give us an overview of when did you start playing football and where did you start playing football? When did you first fall in love with the game?
I first fell in love with the game at the age of 6. That's when I joined, at 8 if I'm not mistaken, that's where I joined a team called Ibra United. After that, I joined Curls River, and then I went on to join Old Mutual Academy. And then after Old Mutual Academy, that's when I joined Hellenic. From Hellenic, that's where I went to Supersport. And after that, that's where I find myself right now in Namibia.
And, here in Namibia, we hear and read a lot about, you know, the developmental structure of South African football. We've had some of the youth national teams come to Namibia for some tournaments. We've got some insight from them. But as a player, give us some insight into what it was like growing up in the South African youth football. What was your experience like?
To be honest, I had a great experience, obviously, in youth football in South Africa. The football, the youth development football is really growing, and I was one of the lucky players to obviously grow up in a setup such as Supersport United. And they were known for developing young players, and if I can say they were one of the best development teams here before they obviously got sold.
Yeah, and now speaking of them being sold, what are your thoughts on Supersport United? You know, especially basically no longer existing. Like, what are your thoughts on that? I know we've seen, before you answer, sorry, we've seen similar happen now with Bidvest also. You know, these are big names in South African football that no longer exist. Well, what are your thoughts on that?
It wasn't a nice feeling, obviously, not only for myself, but everyone that was involved in the team, and as well as for South African football as a whole. As you mentioned, Bidvest First was one of the teams also that were doing quite well in producing young players, not only for the country, for the national team, and obviously abroad. So it was the same thing with Supersport United. It wasn't a nice feeling, but yeah, it happens, and it's becoming a norm now, which is really, really hurtful. Yeah,
no, there's a lot of household names are leaving us these days.
Yeah.
So back to now, youth football. You represented South Africa at under 17 level. Talk to us about what it was like being involved in that structure. You know, you played with players from different parts of the country and so on. What was that like?
I would say it was a great experience. Not only being part of the national team and winning the COSAFA under 17, but just being there, surrounded by the great players that were part of that squad. To mention a few, Puso Didichan was there. He's currently playing for Chicago Fire. Duduzi Shabalala, currently at Kaizer Chiefs. Tando Nkosi, currently at TS Galaxy in the first team. So these are players that I was lucky to be surrounded by and are doing quite well. Come back to your question, being part of that squad was really special. And obviously having the man in charge of us, Fela Kumalo Kandrili, currently the head coach of the Kaizer Chiefs MDC team. He was also part of the technical team at the Under-17 World Cup. So, and not to forget to mention Coach Morena, who's currently the head coach of Botswana's national senior team. So, it was quite a privilege to be part of that team, and I'm really lucky to say that I was part of that team. Yeah.
And when you were part of that team, did you guys play any like international tournaments?
No, we only played the COSAFA Under-17, and obviously we won it, and then we were supposed to play the AFCON the following year, but then that's when COVID hit.
Okay. Yeah. And in your time in youth football, whether it was with SuperSport or any other club, did you get to play any international tournaments?
Yes, I was. I was able to play youth international tournaments with SuperSport United Under 14, the Yoden Cup that was played in the UK.
Okay, how what was that experience like?
Yeah, if I can think of that moment again, it was quite a great experience. Learning, seeing how things are done. And not to forget to mention, I also played just a few friendlies after we won the Under-23, Under-10 Tiski Challenge League. Yeah, it was 2023, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
We got to play in the UK again, which is just something else. Football on that side of the world is really different.
Yeah, could you like feel the difference in levels?
Yes, I could feel the difference in levels. Yes, they, sad to say, but they're way ahead of us as Africans in football. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you were in at SuperSport, and then when you joined the Under-17 national team, did you feel like you were of the level of the national team, or did you feel like some of the players were a bit ahead of you in terms of like skill and tactical understanding and things like that? Like, did it feel like a big jump for you when you started playing for the national team?
No, it wasn't a big jump to say, because at the time I got called up to the Under-17 national team, I was already playing Under-23 football.
Okay. So you're used to like a fast-paced football.
Yeah, fast-paced football, yes.
Who were some of your footballing heroes growing up? Can be local or international?
There was quite a few players. Tulani Sachwayo was one of them. And I was lucky to share the changing room, not only the changing room, share the pitch with him as well at SuperSport United. We had the likes of Happy Chelo, was also one locally in South Africa. There's quite a few names, yes. Yeah.
Any international names that you looked up to, or maybe still look up to today?
International names: Sergio Ramos, Thiago Silva, Koulibaly. Yeah, those are the players that I actually enjoyed watching.
Yeah, and at your time at SuperSport, did you have any interactions at all with Gavin Hunt, or was he gone by then already when you were there?
When I was at SuperSport, I worked under Coach Gavin Hunt.
Yeah,
he's the one that actually gave me my professional debut in the CAF Confederation Cup. So
okay,
yeah, I worked with him.
What was it like working with him? I mean, we only see him on TV. So what was he like in person?
He's just himself.
Yeah,
he's just himself. He has no filter. He wants the best for everyone and for the best for the team. And he's one coach that really gives opportunity to young players. So that's why I mentioned I was really lucky to play under him.
And now, speaking of your professional debut, give us some insight into when you first got the notice that you're going to be turning professional. What did that feel like? And maybe what was that process like? Do you like sign a contract to say, no, I'm officially professional now? How did it work?
Way before the time I actually got invited to train with the first team, I signed a professional contract.
And you were how old then?
I was 17, 18, if I'm not mistaken, when I signed my first professional contract. So at the time I was playing under 23 football, but I was training with the first team as well. So it wasn't anything that was said to me. I was actually caught by surprise because I was training with the team, and then as we're preparing for the CAF Confederation, that's when that's on the day, that's where I saw, hey, I'm actually in the start.
Win big, win now with Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Get a 200% sports bonus of up to 2,000 Namibian dollars. Sign up now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
That's when that's on the day, that's where I saw, hey, I'm actually in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
And I won't lie, it was a great feeling. It's a feeling that one can't express into words. There was a lot of emotions involved as well, not only from my side, but from the family and obviously the ones close to me. But yeah, thanks to the man above.
Yeah, and that particular match, how did that go? Do you feel like you put your best foot forward? Or
to be honest, I felt like I did put my best foot forward. I gave my all. Obviously, it's a moment that all players wait for, obviously, to make it professionally. So yeah, I believe I put my best foot forward, and the game ended 1-1.
And okay, since then, now obviously you've signed for Namibian team FC Ongos. Tell us about how did that come about? Was it something that was always on your radar? And yeah, we'll take it from there.
For me, it was, I wanted to get out of, I wanted a new environment, and obviously to get out of my comfort zone.
So you, not to cut you off. So you, did you want to leave, or was it because SuperSport was sold that you said, okay, now I have to look somewhere else?
SuperSport was sold, and at the time, my contract was coming to an end.
Okay.
So when the team switched to Sibelela FC now at the moment, it was decided that my contract won't be renewed.
Okay.
So it was a thing. There was, I had an option to stay in South Africa, but as I also said when I answered your question, I wanted a new challenge and I wanted to get out of my comfort zone. And when I was speaking to my agent, and from the research that I've done, I saw the Namibian Premier League as a growing and competitive league where I could further my development. And with that being said, I felt like it was the right move for both my personal growth as well as my career.
Yeah. And so did your agent reach out to Ongos, or did Ongos reach out to your agent? How, like, I'm curious, how did that connection come about?
I would be lying if I said I knew.
Yeah. Okay, now since you've been here in Namibia now, it's since October, it's a few months now, how have you been settling in? Like, what are your thoughts on Namibia and so on?
It's been a great experience so far.
Yeah.
From the moment I arrived, I felt welcomed from my teammates, the club, as well as the supporters.
Yeah.
And Namibia, it's quite competitive. It's quite competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I've enjoyed adapting to different style of plays, as well as growing as a player, as well as a leader.
Yeah. And I mean, Namibia is not too different from South Africa, so I don't think, you know, maybe culturally it's not that, hasn't been that much of a culture shock, you would say?
Culturally,
or socially, rather?
Socially, yeah. Obviously, trying to adapt to new cultures, different personalities, different people, language barrier as well. So, yeah, but with the teammates I have and the technical team that we have and the people that I've been surrounded around by, they made the transition much easier for me.
Now, how has it been working with Coach Ronnie?
Coach Ronnie? I won't lie. It's been great working with Coach Ronnie.
Yeah.
It's been great. I've learned a lot from him. And I would love to believe I've grown as a player under Coach Ronnie Kananelo.
Yeah. No, he's a polarizing figure, let me say like that. But definitely a smart footballing mind. What are your thoughts on Namibian football overall? Has the level been higher or maybe even lower than what you expected? How would you assess Namibian football, especially in comparison to what you're coming from, South African football?
I'm not one to to compare. As I said, Namibia, I saw Namibia as a growing and competitive league. So with that being said, Namibia is growing and it is becoming competitive because with the number of foreign players coming in the country and obviously leaving. So I would say they're on the right path. They're on the right path.
Yeah. And is there any other South Africans on the FC Ongos team or are you the only one?
No, I'm the only South African in FC Ongos.
Is there any other foreign players? Other, like maybe from Botswana, Angola?
We have two Zambians and a Ghanaian.
Okay, okay, okay. And, you know, as a, you know, you're 21 years old, correct?
22.
22?
Yeah.
How would the city of Windhoek, what do you think about the city of Windhoek? And before you answer, I ask that because, you know, for many Namibians, especially those that come from outside Namibia, you know, Windhoek is seen as, it can be a place with many distractions, let me say it like that. And I also know a lot from, you know, listening to a lot of South African players, a lot of young South African players that sign in South Africa that, sometimes it can be easy to be distracted. So in comparison to SA and Windhoek, how is that for you?
I've heard a lot about Windhoek being a distraction, as you just mentioned now. But I would say I find it quite well for me as well. But the thing is also, I don't have much to say about Windhoek being a distraction, whatever the case may be, because I'm always indoors.
Okay.
So I won't. Let me say I'm not the right person to judge.
And outside of football, what do you enjoy doing? What's an activity you like to partake in?
I enjoy playing PlayStation, watching series, movies, going out with my friends. Yeah, going out with the family as well.
Yeah,
that's about me.
And when you moved to Namibia, you came alone or were you able to move with some family?
No, when I moved to Namibia, I moved alone.
Okay, okay. So I'm sure you're in contact a lot with your family on WhatsApp and such.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners before I let you go today? Something people don't know about you? Or maybe even something you want to ask out there that maybe our listeners can help you with when it comes to Namibia?
About the questions, no, I don't have any questions. But I just want to say thank you to all the people that have been supporting me and showing me love. It really keeps me going. And I want to say the love and support is not going unnoticed. And I just love to ask them to keep on supporting me and showing me love. I really appreciate it and it keeps me going.
And actually, before I let you go, I just want to pull up the table so I make... You know, Ongos is third in the table. Currently 6 points behind African Stars. What would you say to the fans out there in regards to the title race?
Regarding the title race, I'll just like to say all we have to do now is control what we can control. Just give our all every game because there's 4 games remaining now. All we're going to do is just keep on doing what we've been doing and keep on working hard and obviously push to win the 4 remaining games. And if it happens that we end up winning the league, then
yeah,
so be it.
Actually, okay, last question. I just thought of one now. No, in our league, as you know, we play Saturday, Sunday. And I'm sure it wasn't that way for you coming from SuperSport United. How has that adjustment been physically for you and maybe mentally as well? How have you found that?
At first, I didn't understand what was actually going on.
Yeah,
because playing Saturday, Sunday, it really takes a lot from the players. Because on the Saturday, obviously, you give your all, and then the Sunday, you have to give your all again. It's not easy. But obviously that works on the mental strength as well. And that's where the technical team comes in, obviously trying to motivate the players, keep the players going, because it's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do, but mentally I'll give it up to the Namibians. They're quite strong mentally to be doing that season in, season out.
Yeah.
It's really big ups to them.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not easy. Yeah. Have you had communications with Coach Manetti?
Yes. Yeah, he's the director of the team. Yeah.
How have you found him?
I found Mr. Manetti. He's a good guy, positive guy. Yeah, always wants the best for the team. And he's been encouraging, and I would also say he's kept me going. Yeah. He's kept me going with the words of encouragement, not only to me, but the team as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, big ups to him. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, he's did you know about him before he signed, like about his footballing career?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's one of our... He played with Coach Ronnie, actually. They were in the national team together.
National team together, yes, mm-hmm. I know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's one of our local legends.
Yeah.
What team do you support in South Africa?
When I signed for SuperSport, that's when I started supporting SuperSport from then, yeah. So I don't have any team that I'm supporting at the moment. I'm just enjoying the football.
Okay. Now, okay, I know I said my last question before, but now my last question. What do you think about this whole situation with Morocco and Senegal with the AFCON thing? What are your thoughts on that?
I'll prefer not to comment.
Okay, point taken. Thank you very much for joining us, and we wish you the best of luck for the rest of the season and your career moving forward.
Thank you very much, and I just want to say happy Independence Day to Namibia.
Thank you. There was Liyema Dopolo joining us, young defender all the way from South Africa, currently playing his football at FC Ongos in the Namibian Premier League by way of the club formerly known as SuperSport United. Update in the Arsenal-Manchester City fixture, the Carabao Cup final. It is still 0-0 in that fixture, 40 minutes played. As I said, if anything changes, you will hear from me. But with that said, that good conversation we had from Liyema, we are now, after the short musical break, we will be joined by the cycling phenom. Eagle FM, good evening.
Good evening, how are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Long time.
What would you like to share with us today?
Who is that person that you were interacting with?
He's a defender for FC Ongos, Liyema Dopolo from South Africa.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I have come across him.
Yeah, young guy.
I'm happy. Let's support him.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give all the necessary support.
Yeah.
All our sports legendary.
Mm-hmm.
You see how because many a times when they come back, we don't support them, and they also, I know they also want to plow back into the community.
Yeah.
So let's see, make sure that we lay behind them, and most of them, they are also wishing to establish some kind of club, sports club.
Mm-hmm.
And then they inject it with this wellness program.
Yeah.
And the administration of sports.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have just experienced recently some kind of, I don't know whether it's a don't care kind of attitude. Young ones who were going to, 2 weeks ago now,
okay,
they were going to perform in the kitchens. And then these young ones, we have to beg their parents to come with us, and they have to get stranded almost 3 days, 2 days.
What sport was this?
It was boxing.
Okay.
And what we want to make sure that they are administrating.
Mm-hmm.
I know the chief administrative officer, somebody who really loves sports, and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it's the regional office people who are now managing this kind of things in this manner.
Yeah.
It's just confusion. So I'm going to get the detail because I don't have the detail with me now here. They're very far from me. And I really want to get those details and talk to Mr. Fred here.
Yeah.
And whoever is administering this thing. This thing is really disturbing, and the children have to experience some of this kind of hardship. How do you manage this?
Can you do me a favor?
Mm-hmm.
Can you send the details to 081?
Okay,
081-200-200-4144. But on, are you able to send on WhatsApp?
I think so.
Yeah, please send it on WhatsApp.
201-200-4144.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Then we'll look into it as well.
I'm so disturbed about this thing, honestly speaking. We are going to talk about it, give you the detail, and also get the insights from the coach and other administrators.
Yes, please.
Good.
All right. Yes. If you'd like to chime in, 0832-888-401, 0832-888-401. If you'd like to chime in with any thoughts, questions, comments, concerns, if you're like that listener that had some concerns about something that happened in youth boxing that we will follow up with. So thank you for that contribution. But now, let's hear from the cycling phenom himself. That is none other than Mr. Roger Searin. On the other side of this commercial break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually
Eagle FM, hello? Eagle FM, hello?
Yes, good evening, my brother. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, man.
What would you like to share with us this evening?
Yeah, I'd like to have a comment when it comes to African Cup. The strip of Morocco, Senegal.
What do you think about it?
No, it's very, very, very sad story. Yeah. And I think if it's this happening in Africa, we already know, we are not really going to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this meeting after 2 months, isn't it? For 2 months, we have this cycle which is going on.
Yeah, it makes us look bad.
Yeah, very bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what we need as African, really. Sorry, but I'm moving away from distraction a bit, man.
You are at the Kandingosho or what?
There's a music here playing. We are watching Arsenal, you know.
Yeah.
People are watching Arsenal and Manchester City. And I just hope that we are going to win it, Arsenal fan.
Oh, you are an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, I'm Arsenal fan.
Let's see.
Next day is when we are having unbeaten run. So I started supporting Arsenal.
Okay.
Yeah, because I can even give you the first 11 of those days.
Of the invincible team.
Yeah.
Let's hear.
Oh, yeah, in the goal we have David Seaman. We have Campbell and Tony Adam. And the light back, we have Roland. We have also FL Cole. We have the captain, Viera. Dennis Beckham. We have on the right wing. There are players, or sometimes Les. Les, you remember?
Yeah.
The later. Yeah. And at the left, we have a guy, what's his name, man? Up front, I think we have Witold. Witold sometimes also can play in the wing.
Who?
You remember the Witold? Witold from France.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we have Henry, and we have Kanu.
Okay. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I know, my friend.
Let's see.
That was a team.
Yeah, no, that was a good team.
Yeah, but anyway, let us go back to the subject.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the thing with what regarding Morocco, I think there's too much controversy. First of all, the referee was so poor to handle the game.
Yeah.
And I think this is also lie with the CAF for their selection. Because if you know the person again at the end of that under pressure with the final, why should you choose a referee to spoil the whole tournament?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing for me, I think what they need to do is because now it's very hard. What did they support me to do the first thing? They're supposed to suspend those players for Senegal for stepping out of the field.
Mm-hmm.
But they allowed the game to continue, which I don't know, understand. Even some of us, we have a question like, what is this happening? Because even our mature, even our unprofessional football in Namibia, we understand the game.
Yeah.
You cannot step, once you step out, you are out. There's no return.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like even when your shoes fall off, your boots fall off, you have to ask the assistant referee even to, for you to step out so you can put it back.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game of the football. Even when you are one water, you cannot just come out of the field. You get a caution like a yellow card.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't understand why those guys are playing in Europe, most of them. Then the behavior, we understand it was a challenge, and the referee was not it was one-sided, but serious. And the game takes so long to make a decision. Remember, even the evening holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the to celebrate their cup. Now we are stripping off already. It's really hurting. After 2 months even. Then I'm wondering even that, is this cup is going all over with the medalia, with the sponsorship, or how is it going? And the money.
Mm-hmm.
What is the involvement there? And how they are going to handle it anyway? Because that's me. I'm having my medalia which is hanging in my sitting room. Now I have to give it
to
the player.
Give it back.
Then they receive it. They give back and then they receive what? A silver medal? No.
Yeah. Did you see? Senegal took the trophy to the military base.
Yeah. You see now. And then now how they are going to get it? Excuse us, as a kid, we want them a trophy with you guys are hiding in the camp.
Yeah.
Going to war.
Yeah. No.
No. But it's really a mess, and I think yes. Next time they must do better.
Yeah, no, they really have to look at themselves.
Yeah, seriously.
Mm.
It was in their own setup, their own mess up. Otherwise, they're supposed to handle this thing for a long time. Because remember, you're having an assistant referee, you're having these people who are, and what do you call it, this one, Vieira.
Yeah.
And they have also the match commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
What is their take? That game.
Yeah, I guess we'll hear now in court what they have to say.
Oof. Yeah. Okay, anyway, let me give other people a chance.
All right,
my brother.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, sure.
Yes, the number in the studio is 0832 888 401. That's 0832 888 401 if you'd like to chime in. And we're going to take a short musical break with some lovely sounds from Mr. Bob Marley before we get in touch with our guest for today. That is Mr. Roger Searin, local cycling phenom. We'll be back after this sounds. From the one and only Bob Marley.
Party.
are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm now joined by none other than Mr. Roger Searin, Namibia's very own cycling phenom, who just made the nation proud by officially becoming a professional cyclist. Before we get to that, commercial break.
Mwana paleka ekufombinga lo ela landulako pamwe no parates de tolundulukile komkalo elongi folo prepaid go sim tofutu ko khulo enyala ke dole fela dike mokasim keshe o mwakwatero shalishe gigabyte omlongo nanano ovo unana tango mito yo ku recharge no kulimonena o wawe data konda do iwa ya tuwa pomo doropa toshininge fimbo keshe olove wa pumbwa ila ulimoneno ka parates go sim koe menti kikeshe ololi lipo pepinave e mangono malandula fano odo dino kulandurwa power yo Next chat, stream, call with Parates.
Always prepare Parates.
So, what will your friends think if you show up at school with a brand new 10th gen iPad? TopScore Instant is making back to school in 2026 the coolest thing ever, giving away unbelievable prizes. To win one of 8 iPads or a weekly stationery voucher worth 1,000 Namibian dollars, simply buy a 1kg or 2kg TopScore Instant from any store nationwide and SMS Instant to 2442. Competition ends 31 March 2026. T's and C's apply. TopScore, a proud product of Namib Mills.
Care that helps you care for others. That's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP. Rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm now joined by none other than Mr. Roger Searin, Namibia's very own cycling phenom, who just made the nation proud by officially becoming a professional cyclist. Roger, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, yeah, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for making time for us. I know you're a very busy man these days. So before we get to, you know, the major announcement from a few weeks ago, let's start at the very beginning, you know, with your cycling journey. When did you start cycling? Has cycling always been your number one sport? And yeah, let's take it from there.
Yeah, so before cycling, I did like other sports. I did, swimming. Well, swimming wasn't really a sport. It was just something to learn how to swim. And then, I did gymnastics and football. And then in grade one, I started cycling. And from there on, like in grade one, I did soccer and cycling together. And then from grade two on, it was only cycling.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so how I actually came into the sport is actually through a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And he's same age as me, so when we were grade one, we went to the same school, and the one afternoon when I came back from the choir...
You were in the choir?
But I think back then it was compulsory.
Okay.
So, then I came back from the choir, and he was at cycling practice.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I wasn't cycling yet, but then I walked past there, and I was like, I asked him if I can quickly ride his bike.
Yeah.
And so he gave me his bike, and I just like rode it around there. And Caroline Yannick, I think a few people might know her.
Yeah.
She then asked me, where's your helmet, and why are you riding the bike? And I don't really know what I answered, but she wasn't very happy, and then climbed off the bike, gave everything back, and I walked to the daycare which is right next to where they cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And when my mom came to pick me up, then she talked to Miss Caroline, and then my mom was like, maybe it's a sign I should start cycling.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there on, I started cycling, and in that year I also did my first race,
yeah,
which was a schools league, still on a small BMX.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it all started, yeah, just with the small BMX, no gears,
yeah,
only, yeah.
And since then, can you remember like your first initial feelings of being on a bike? Like what did that feel like?
Yeah, I don't really remember a lot of how it felt, but
mm-hmm.
I can definitely say I was really happy on the bike.
Yeah,
it was always something to look forward to when I to go to training, and I mean I made friends through cycling, and a few friends also cycled with me, like my one friend that got me into cycling. And yeah.
Does your friend still cycle today?
No, he doesn't cycle anymore, but yeah, he still cycled with me for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He stopped about 2 years ago, but yeah, it's sad, but I mean, yeah, we all move forward, and
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but we're still very good friends.
That's good. And that's good.
So the friendship is not lost.
Yeah, exactly. So share with the listeners, like what is it about cycling that, you know, that you obviously love so much? Like what do you love about cycling?
It's lots of different things. It's just, I don't know, the being on the bike is makes me feel a bit free.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, yeah, to be outside, it's a bit different.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, I listen to music when I ride on really difficult days where I'm not very motivated, but
mm-hmm.
95% of the time I try to stay away from music when I'm on the bike, just yeah, because, yeah, either people around you or just to, yeah, go out in nature and just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then there's the racing part. I mean, training is nice, but racing is actually the main part of it.
Yeah,
racing isn't, I wouldn't say I'd stop if I wouldn't race anymore. I would still cycle, because I mean the training and the racing is both fun. It both has the pros and cons, and yeah, but for the racing, it's, you can really dig so deep. It's sort of something you can't really do in training, even though you have an all-out session or so. It's, yeah, in training it's really difficult.
Yeah.
In races you can really just go all out. You don't have to worry about any numbers like power numbers or heart rate, or
mm-hmm.
you can just go full gas, and yeah, just that feeling. It's sort of, while the adrenaline is ready at peak, it yeah. spikes it even more.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm sure. I mean, in any sport, really, it's hard to replicate in training what the actual, like, competition day is like. But like you said, I'm sure on race day, that when the adrenaline's pumping, you can just go all out. So I want to hear from you. When was? Do you remember your first, like, whether it was competition or maybe just day of training, where you're like, you know what, I'm actually pretty good at this. I want to take this a bit serious.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say there's a specific moment. I think I sort of faded into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, when you're younger, I think the most important thing is to just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my parents really, really made that work for me. They didn't push me.
Mm-hmm.
They just made me enjoy it. I mean, when I was younger, on weekends, when my parents went to go ride, I would sometimes say, no, I don't want to go ride. Then I'd just stay in bed and
yeah.
keep on sleeping. But yeah. I mean, that was like when I was 10, 11, 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then they went to go ride without me. And then just all of a sudden, yeah, when I was about 13, 14 years old,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that just all changed. And I go out for weekends with friends on the bike and just enjoy it. It's also not something I did alone.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a social part as well. I mean, if you know you're going to meet people,
mm-hmm.
it's a bit of a motivation as well.
Exactly.
And yeah, from there on, it just went uphill. And then, yeah, I'd say 2 years ago, 2024,
mm-hmm.
it was actually the same day as my birthday.
Yeah.
I had a race in Switzerland. And it was a muddy race, and yeah, we as Namibians, we're not really used to muddy conditions.
Yeah, not at all.
I mean, it doesn't really rain here.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really, like, I struggled in that race, and I did some big mistakes, and Yeah, because it's new conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, afterwards, I also didn't really feel like I gave it my all. And then after analyzing looking at my power numbers, I was like, yo, this is actually crazy. These power numbers are really, they're insane.
Yeah.
And yeah, then when I thought about the race a bit more, I actually saw that that's where I really got to see that going that deep is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, even though that wasn't my best race, I think that was the race where I had a big mind shift. And yeah, from there on, that mind shift has stayed with me, or that mindset.
100%. And speaking of the muddy conditions, obviously you're a professional mountain biker now, but I assume I know you did some road biking as well. Did you always prefer mountain over road?
No, I don't really prefer one over the other.
Yeah.
For me, if you ask me which one I would rather choose, I wouldn't be able to give you an answer.
Really?
It's like they both have the
pros and cons.
Yeah, but like for instance on the mountain bike, you can go down a trail and it's really technical and mm-hmm. you really have to focus, and yeah, I mean there's rocks in the way, you have to avoid the rocks mm-hmm. and really have technique through the turns, and you can just like there's a sort of a free feeling going down a trail
yeah.
as fast as you can, and yeah, just using every part of your bike and your body to go through the corners and over the jumps and mm-hmm. through the rock gardens or so.
Yeah.
And yeah, on the road bike, I mean, you still need skill and technique to go down a twisty downhill, but it's also the speed.
Mm-hmm.
It's like on a mountain bike, you go down a downhill maybe 45, 50 kilometers an hour.
Yeah.
On the really fast parts, on a road bike, you go 45 average for 2-2.5 hours
yeah.
in races, sometimes for 3-4 hours
mm-hmm.
and if you really put down the power on some flat sections, you can really go 50-60. I mean, that's also a good feeling to
yeah.
have. So
yeah, zooming right through.
Yeah.
And the first time I think I came across, you know, your talent, I think was during the FNB Mountain Schools League. That's like when I first caught wind of you. Talk to us a bit about that competition. How integral was that as part of your cycling development, and just your overall thoughts on that competition?
Yeah, I think as we got older, it sort of became a bit more secondary
mm-hmm.
because I mean goals change, priorities change, and also I mean school sort of becomes more important, and yeah, it's just all these different things. But I think yeah. especially as a young when I was younger
mm-hmm.
those were always the races I was most excited about,
because
mm-hmm. it's like where you see all the kids, and it's like it was so nice to just race everyone
yeah.
And then when we were younger, we used to have lucky draws. I remember yeah. the one lucky draw, we got like erasers
mm-hmm.
in the form of like little books or pens or something, and when I was younger, that was like really cool.
Mm-hmm. What you know, over the years, what's been some of your favorite Namibian competitions? Can be road or mountain.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed the Windhoek Pedal Powers, the road races,
because
mm-hmm. yeah, that's the only road series that we have, and yeah, just to do a little bit of road is nice. Although we don't really have the numbers in the elite bunches,
mm-hmm.
it's still something I always look forward to. And then, yeah, the Rock and Rut races, that's our sort of national series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those races were also always nice. They were, yeah, it's like the big XCO races where we could race the elites or just race each other. I mean, it's friends of mine that raced against me. There's, yeah, sometimes when we had the UCI races,
mm-hmm.
other big names mostly from South Africa, they came. So it was always nice to compete in those races.
Yeah. Is there, you know, coming up, were there any Namibian cyclists that you used to look up to, like for inspiration, or maybe, I don't know if you even had contact with them, any local riders that, you know, you really drew inspiration from?
Yeah, so I'd say definitely Alex. He was always the one that sort of set the base baseline or the base mark.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was the, I mean, we still had Dan Craven, but I think, yeah, I was still very young when Dan was still riding.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really get to experience a lot of that, or maybe, yeah, I didn't realize all of that, but I know he also did some great things, and it's also always nice to have a conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but I would say Alex, just because he's someone I saw how he sort of went step by step into
went through the ranks
and team and
mm-hmm.
so on. So that's that was also a bit of a motivation that it's possible to get into a European team.
Yeah,
and, yeah.
And then, I mean, now at the what was that? I think it was the one of the Nedbank races where you beat him in a sprint. What did that feel like?
Yeah, that was actually crazy. That was the Namibian national champ.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, I don't really know. It's a bit of a mixed feeling.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was a really tough race. That was actually my longest road race I've done.
Mm-hmm.
4 hours, and, yeah, I don't know. I just, somehow, I was able to always stick to his wheel when he attacked.
Mm-hmm.
I must say I was actually quite lucky with the wind and the conditions.
Yeah.
I think if it would have been warmer, would have maybe played out a bit different, and the wind was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on the last part, like this last 15 Ks.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to attack me 3 or 4 times, and yeah, all I had to do is just get back on his wheel, and then I knew I was in the slipstream.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I knew if I just hang on, I would have a good chance in the sprint. And yeah, I always trust my sprint, so
yeah, no, that was, I mean, I was there taking photos. It was quite fun to witness. So let's talk about representing Namibia. When was the first time you represented Namibia, and like, what are your overall, like, how does it feel to represent Namibia every time you cycle, whether it's locally or at international competitions?
Yeah, so I think the first time I actually represented Namibia was in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry. In 2016.
Okay.
That was at the...
You were how old then?
Yo, I think I turned 10.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure now, but... I turned 9 in that year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was at the African Continental Champs. And, yeah, there was quite a big group of... different age with riders from different age groups, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, we were lucky to have a under 10 race at the African Champs. So me and a friend Sean Lowe,
mm-hmm.
both of us we went down and raced in the same category, and yeah, I actually won that race.
Nice,
but we were
nice.
Only like 5 people on the start line, but yeah, so
a win is a win.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also that's where the, I would say, where a spark maybe came.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, also, yeah, now actually back to the other question about someone that inspired me when I was really young, Herbert Peters.
Mm-hmm.
He used to also cycle. He was one of my big inspirations when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually met him in Lesotho, where the African champs were, and yeah, every time he races was like, just where's he,
yeah,
and like I was just cheering him on, and yeah, it's like as if he was the only one racing.
Yeah. And when you go to represent Namibia, do you feel any pressure to represent Namibia, or is it just another race for you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's just another race, but I also don't really feel pressure.
Uh-huh.
It's, yeah, over the years, I think it's something I've gotten used to.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember I asked Timo Grossman when I was younger at a schools league race when he was actually still in school. I asked him if he ever gets nervous at a race, and he was like, "No, I don't get nervous anymore." And I just told him, "Yo, I get so nervous, like I can still remember that feeling in my stomach.
Yeah,
like everything just feels like it wants to jump out."
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but now as I've gotten older, I understand, because yeah, you just get used to the feeling. And also, I mean, I prepare myself for the races. It's not as if I just rock up there and think, okay, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
So I prepare, I plan, and yeah, so I think the preparation part is something that also helps a lot.
Now, speaking of preparation, give us some insight into what a typical, maybe let's say 2-3 days of training looks like for you. Let's say you have a race on Saturday. What does maybe Monday to Wednesday look like for you?
Yeah, so in a race week, yeah, I think it depends as well how important the race is.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, let's say it's a very important race. I'll probably do on Monday maybe a easy spin, like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Then Tuesday will probably be some harder efforts, maybe. Yeah, I'd say some sprints, like 30-second sprints.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it depends. Sometimes talk, sometimes it's just like a full-out sprint, and then with shorter rest between.
Yeah.
And yeah, then yeah, Wednesday, it's yeah, mostly a easier day as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tuesday, start with track practice, and Thursday, start with track practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Fridays would then be activation day, so it's also on the course, and then yeah, just some activation. It depends on the race as well.
Mm-hmm.
What type of activation I do, and then yeah, Saturday would be the race.
And okay, so following up on that, let's talk about the road champs last year in Rwanda. First, what was the preparation for that? Was it like different to what you normally do, you know, considering all the hills that they have there? And then second, just what was that experience like overall for you?
Yeah, so the experience was also a bit mixed.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a really good time trial on a road bike to, yeah, I was 3 minutes, 3 seconds behind the winner.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on a full TT setup.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was just on a road bike, normal road gear. So it's, yeah, it's quite impressive. I actually talked to Hans, one of my coaches, about it quite a lot. And yeah, it was quite an impressive performance. I actually, yeah, myself was quite
satisfied?
Shocked.
Oh, shocked? Okay, okay. Yeah. Like surprised with how well you did?
Surprised about the performance, and yeah, the preparation wasn't optimal.
Yeah.
As I had the XCO World Champs a few weeks before that, and obviously my focus was on XCO and not on the road.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think we could have done a bit better in the preparation for the road, but because of XCO, I think it was the best we could do.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, maybe the endurance part lacked a bit for the road race.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the time trial, I still did extremely well. And yeah, the road race was just stick as long as you can and finish the race, and everything after that as a bonus. And yeah, I think I managed that quite well.
How difficult were those championships mentally? I mean, like, if you remember, I was there as well. And at the finish line, you know, some people were even, like, basically collapsing at the finish line. So can you maybe give us some insight into how difficult that competition was mentally and physically?
Yeah, so, yeah, physically, I mean,
would you say that was the hardest competition you've had to do to date?
I wouldn't say it's the hardest, but it's definitely up there on the list. So, yeah, but so physically, I'd say yeah, towards the end of the race,
mm-hmm.
I definitely started hurting,
mm-hmm.
especially, like on the climbs, it feels like full gas every lap.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we had to do, I think it was 7 or 8 laps.
Yeah.
And yeah, lap 6, I cracked on the last climb.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was what, 2 laps where I really had to push myself, and I was really like, I was empty, mm-hmm. and cramping, and yeah, it was, yeah, I'm normally not someone that cramps, so if I cramp, it's like I'm really empty.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that just shows it was physically very demanding.
Yeah.
And I think mentally, yeah, it's difficult to put a mental, or difficult to say how hard it was mentally.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it's different for everyone, and yeah, I mean, it's mentally, it was really difficult, but yeah, sometimes you have sessions where you feel the same, so yeah, you just have to push through it, and
yeah,
until you get to the finish line, and if you're there, you're very happy.
Mm-hmm. And last question on Rwanda, what was it like to, like, that atmosphere, you know, all the world's best cyclists were there, you know, the guys like Tadej and all those people were there. What did that feel like for you as a young up-and-coming cyclist?
You know, that was quite the experience.
Yeah.
I mean, normally we always see them on TV, and now we saw them in person.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, especially watching the elite race, I think just to see the sheer speed they have, and yeah, to watch the numbers they do over what, 6.5 hours.
Yeah, it's quite crazy.
Yeah, that's not just crazy, that's like insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was there as a photographer, and like when they would zoom by me, like going uphill even, it was difficult to comprehend actually how fast they were moving, like even uphill. And like you said, like 4 hours in, they're still moving at crazy speeds.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like they really slow down anytime.
Yeah, never. And your other international competition that you obviously did extremely well in Switzerland, when you finished second at the Mountain Bike World Champs, talk us through that experience. What was that like? And when you crossed the finish line, what did it feel like to take that picture on the podium?
Yeah, so yeah, the week started. Yeah, I wouldn't say. Yeah, I'm a bit lost of words, but
yeah.
Yeah, well, we got there, and the atmosphere is quite different.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's not as big as Road World Champs. Road racing is a way bigger sport.
Yeah,
but still, it's like the vibes there is something I would love to experience every day.
Mm-hmm.
And also the people you meet there, all with the same passion, same ambition.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, just going to track practice, I mean, you ride with your friends from different countries, you meet new people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just so cool to do. I think yeah, those are one of my best moments, definitely.
Yeah.
And then the race, of course, I mean, yeah, before the race, I said to my coach, yeah, like, say, 2 minutes before call-up, I said to him, you know, this is going to be a really good one. I can feel it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, then going to the start line, I was so happy to just stand on that start line. Like, I didn't even think about the race, finishing the race or anything. I was just like, mm-hmm. super happy to just be on that start line.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, as the start gun went off, yeah, everyone just full gas to the first turn.
Mm-hmm.
And going up that first climb, I wouldn't say I felt like I would out sprint everyone on that first climb, but I definitely felt like I had some more power left going up that first climb, while others were sitting in front out of the saddle,
mm-hmm.
going really hard. And that's when I was like, really, okay, now
we can actually
do this. But then second lap came, same climb, just one lap later, and I was sitting in like 11th position or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I'm a bit far behind.
Yeah.
Like, obviously sitting in first is also, it's good, but yeah, you don't want to sit too far in front and not too far to the back. And mm-hmm. I was definitely too far to the back. And yeah, I realized it immediately and I was like, oh, I really need to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So his second lap was actually more about just getting in the right position. And yeah, from there on, I actually found my rhythm. And it was actually from there on, it was Lucas, the French guy,
mm-hmm.
then Ethan Levin, he's from Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
So we rounded up the podium.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually us three that really we like fought each other the whole time. And yeah, the others, they drop one by one.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then second last lap, on the last climb of the lap, I just put on in a full out attack and I immediately got a gap. So yeah, I think that also put a bit of pressure on me. I mean, it's the first time and you think you go down the downhill with a gap and you think of the stripes,
yeah,
the world champ stripes. And
that was in your mind already going down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like not that I have them, but thinking of the stripes, because
mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the big goal,
yeah,
and the dream. So yeah, and then yeah, just going down there, I was quite happy for the gap, but I think maybe yeah, almost got a bit too excited. Obviously I knew I still had to keep that gap. And then
yeah
going into the last lap on a rooty section, my tire slipped and yeah, the gap vanished
yeah.
in like no time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so then me and the French guy Lucas, we fought like for almost the whole lap. And then I just made a silly mistake on one of the downhills,
mm-hmm.
and my back tire slipped away, and he immediately pulled the gap. And yeah, unfortunately that's how the win sort of creeped away. But I mean, he also deserves it. And I mean, it's all part of racing. It's a mistake I did, not a mistake that he did.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he still deserved to be on top. And yeah, it's actually exciting to know that he'll probably be there, or hopefully when I get to the two elite races. And yeah, that I'll see him there. And yeah, just so cool, the thought of it, that we'll probably
get a rematch again.
Yeah,
it'll be like you and him will be like Tadej and Remco.
Yeah,
going at it at every event. So let's talk about now the major announcement of you signing with Alpecin. You know, when did they first contact you? And yeah, just walk us through that journey. When they first contacted you, how you felt when they first contacted you, and when things became official. Let's go through that for a bit.
Yeah, so the first talk was actually already in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
It was the day after our race.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just about to go back to our accommodation. And yeah, the boss of, or it's actually two brothers, and the one brother who's so they share the team. They're the boss of Alpecin Premier Tech.
Yeah.
And yeah, the one brother, he called me, and I was like, really, is it, are you calling me? And
yeah
I looked back, and I was like, yeah, I wasn't really sure. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, and then he asked me, yeah, you got like 10 minutes? And I'm like, I said, yeah, why not? Yeah, so he just waited for his brother, and then we started talking. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, that was where initial contact was made. And then yeah, then it was negotiations. It was mostly Hans that did the negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
Because he also worked with Alex for his team, so he also, and also saw how Alex how he got into the teams, and so he has a bit more knowledge about
yeah
what the teams want, what they need, what they give. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, so yeah, he managed all that. And yeah, then we got a proposal over email.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually last year while we were at the Road World Champs.
Oh, really? Okay.
And yeah, so then it became a bit more serious, like, okay, this is crazy. I can actually ride for one of the world's best teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, then now, what, two, three weeks ago, I signed with them. And, yeah, it's a bit crazy still to believe, but,
yeah. When you now officially put the ink on the paper, what did that feel like, that you can officially say you're a pro cyclist for one of the world's best teams?
It's difficult to explain. It's like,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like, obviously it puts a bit of pressure on you. It's not just a team. It's, mm-hmm. it's quite a big team. So, and it's a team that performs quite well. And yeah, to just have that name on is, yeah, you don't want to have a bad performance.
Yeah.
Obviously sooner or later, a bad performance will come. For some other reason, but yeah, it's just, but on the other side, like, I was extremely happy. I mean, it's actually more than a dream come true.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I really put my foot in the door. So
100%, 100%. Yeah. And I looked at the Alpecin's roster. You're the only African rider on mountain and road. What does that feel like?
Yeah, that's something very special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm the first African rider, which is very cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's almost the cooler part of all this. But, yeah, obviously the support is also, it's crazy because, I mean, going from virtually doing everything by myself before the race to
mm-hmm.
now when I go overseas, they'll have the whole setup there, their own mechanic, and yeah, basically everything is given to me.
Yeah.
Basically only have to eat and race.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's quite a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, now I'm super excited for the first race. And yeah, as I haven't had a race with them directly,
mm-hmm.
like with their support,
mm-hmm.
obviously the races in South Africa is... It's seen as a local race, so there's no team support and so on.
Okay.
But yeah, once I go overseas, it's full support from them. And yeah.
And as we wrap up, when will your first race be?
I don't know the exact date. It will be on the weekend of, I think, the 23rd of May.
And that'll be in Europe, I'm assuming?
Yeah,
yeah,
it will be my first European race.
Mm-hmm.
We still have three UCI races here in Namibia,
or okay.
two in Namibia and one in South Africa
mm-hmm.
before I go over. So I think that's a good one to get some more UCI points.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, hopefully I can also get into the short track for the World Cups and then, yeah.
And, you know, briefly explain to the listeners, for those that might not know, when we say you're a professional cyclist, what does that entail? What does that mean?
I think that's a question I haven't really asked myself
yet. Yeah. like a typical day as a professional cyclist, what does that look like?
Well,
I guess you wouldn't really know yet, but as you envision, what does that consist of?
Well, yeah, I was at a training camp with them, so
mm-hmm.
yeah, how a day looked there is you wake up at 8 o'clock. You go have breakfast, and then 10 o'clock it's on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah, depending on what the training is, say 3-4 hours. Mm-hmm. I know we also did a 5-hour and a 6-hour ride.
Yeah.
And then yeah, small, just like in during the rides, just small stops.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, say, 5 to 10 minute stops just to refill, I don't know, pee break if you need one.
Or yeah.
Just take off some layers if you had a jacket on or...
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then when you're back from your ride, you just go shower and then you go straight to lunch. From lunch, every second day you have a massage.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then you have a few hours of free time during the day.
Mm-hmm.
then you have a small like team meeting, which would obviously in a normal day wouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 7 o'clock is dinner time, and then round about at 10 o'clock it's in bed, and then
do it all again the next day. And I assume you are moving to Europe, right? Like full time?
Not yet, but maybe in the future. So this year I'll still live in Namibia.
Okay.
But
okay.
I'll go to Europe for 2 months and at a time, and I'll go over twice.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Nice. That's 100%. Is there mountain biking in the Olympics?
Yes, mountain biking and road biking.
Okay. So hopefully 2028 we're gonna turn on our TVs and see Roger representing Namibia on the Olympic stage. Roger, thank you very much for your time today, and best of luck with the upcoming season and all your other future endeavors.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you again for having me.
No problem.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back. That was none other than Roger Suren sharing his story with us here on the Eagle Sports Zone. Fantastic young man, and is on his way to do fantastic things in the world of cycling and doing it whilst bearing the Namibian flag. An update in the Manchester City Arsenal fixture. It is 2-0 for the Citizens. Nico O'Reilly with both goals. About 10 minutes remaining in normal time. It's not looking good for the Gunners. Let's see if they can pull off some magic tricks in the final 10-15 minutes of this fixture. But ladies and gentlemen, that is all the time I have for this evening. I will be back same time, same place next week, Sunday, here on the Eagle Sports Zone for you. Don't forget to subscribe to the Villager newspaper. A new edition will be published tomorrow morning. And with that said, I will now leave you with the lovely sounds of Uncle Bob Marley before the matriarch comes into the studio. This has been another edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. See you next week, Sunday, 6 to 8 p.m. to discuss more interesting things in the sporting world.
We're jamming. I hope you like a diamond too.